has been about the experiences that I've had and the lessons that I've learned during the period of the last few months as I've been recovering from a stroke. It seems very real to me today because this past week, I would say, has been the most difficult week that I've had with that in quite some time. And it was a reminder that that is still there. So I ask you to continue to pray because my intention is to come all the way back. But I wanted to share today a specific question that more than one person has asked me. I've had a number of people who have asked me, don't you feel that it isn't fair for God to allow this in your life? And so I wanted to address this thought. God doesn't owe me anything. I'd like to go into just a bit of depth about those thoughts. Psalm 107, beginning at verse 17 and reading through verse 22. Some became fools through their rebellious ways and suffered affliction because of their iniquities. They loathed all food and drew near the gates of death. Then they cried to the Lord in their trouble, and he saved them from their distress. He sent out his word and healed them. He rescued them from the grave. Let them give thanks to the Lord for his unfailing love and his wonderful deeds for mankind. Let them sacrifice thank offerings and tell of his works with songs of joy. If some one of you, by the way, would be kind enough to get me a cup of water, that may help me get through. I read those words and I began to think about how very true all of those words have been in my life. Because I would have to say yes, when I was a young man, I rebelled against the Lord and became a fool. Hopefully, you're not looking at a fool now, but I certainly was. Now, I'm curious as to whether I'm the only one. We'll take a vote here this morning or an informal survey. How many of you at some point in your life rebelled against God? How many of you would say that you did so to the point of becoming a fool? I had some deep regrets in my life for the viciousness with which, as a young man, I could verbally attack believers. That might not make sense to you, but I certainly did. Thanks, JB. Just as the Apostle Paul, and I'm not comparing myself to him at all, and any other way, but in the same way that he was very zealous against the message of Christ, I was very zealous. I was in that place where you go when you're trying very hard to convince yourself of the truth of a thing that you know is not true. Again, how many of you would say you went through that period? I've always thought that perhaps I hit rock bottom in some ways. In July of 1974, shortly after I had graduated from high school, I went up to Cadillac, Michigan, which at that time was the location where the North Michigan District had its campground. My father had moved into the North Michigan District, taken a church over on the west coast of the state, and I had friends that I had met. They were of the same nature that I was. Did any of you have what we might in older times have called evil companions? I probably at the time would have said, well, you know, they're influencing me in the wrong way. But I mentioned a few months ago, I'd had that discussion with Tom Basciani. On a Thursday evening during Family Matters, Tom had mentioned about people having a bad influence on him, especially when he was in college over here in Oswego. And I shared with him this thought. I said, Tom, you're too much of a leader. I don't believe for a moment that you had friends who were having an influence on you. I think that you're doing what I did. You were having an influence on them. One of my friends was Doug Tibbetts. Doug is now proudly in the semi-pro Football Hall of Fame. He was a very good football player. He's in there as a coach. And he was a year younger than I am, but he had a younger brother, Tim. And Tim had a sensitive heart toward God. And one particular evening, I'd left services early. I'd gotten to the point in my life where I slipped out when it was altar call time. Why do you suppose I might have done that? I slipped out, waited by the back door. I felt as if I sort of knew the drill. I thought, well, they'll sing about five verses of Just As I Am. And if no one comes, they'll sing about five verses of Whiter Than Snow. And if no one comes, the evangelist will give a very specific number of people. He will say that God has laid it on his heart that 17 people ought to come forward. I got a bit skeptical. Maybe I'm wrong. I'll admit I could be wrong. I once got my father's attention in not a good way by asking him if those guys got paid a commission on the basis of how many people came forward. I was very cynical. So there I was at the back, and I saw Tim get up and go forward. And he came back out, tears in his eyes. I asked him what he'd done. He said that he had prayed to receive Christ. And I then spent the next 30 minutes explaining to him why he'd made a tremendous mistake and why he, after all, should not do that. How many of you think that I was deserving of being stoned right at that moment? I ran into Tim years later. I was doing a wedding for his brother. I did the wedding because I knew it would give me an opportunity of making contact again. And all week long before that wedding, I was pondering on what I would say to Tim, because, you know, after you say something, you can never undo it. You can never unsay the words, but perhaps I could say something new. And I waited as the family entered into reception, slipped off, asked Tim if I could speak with him. and began to apologize to him for what I'd done all those years before, and he began to laugh. He said, "John, it's okay. I gave my heart to Christ years ago. Praise God. But I was a fool. I was a stubborn, mean, vindictive, bitter fool." And so I identified with that statement. And yes, I suffered affliction because of my iniquity. The word iniquity isn't just interchangeable. Some people would think, well, iniquity, transgression, sin, they all mean the same thing. They actually mean slightly different forms of the same thing. Sin would simply be something that you have done that would be wrong. Iniquity runs deeper. Iniquity has about it the sense of something that has been twisted and perverted from its true nature. That would be iniquity. It's a bent that I had in myself towards sin. Now, some of you might say, "You must not have had very good parents." I don't have that excuse. I had fantastic parents who lived a great life before me. I just always seemed to be like a moth drawn to the flame. Always seemed to be natural for me to do the wrong things. I could look at it and I could say, well, it was right down in my genes. Because after all, you take bunker blood and white blood and mix them together and this is what you got. But then you could all say the same thing. Because all of us have been born with iniquity within us. I became a grandfather this past week. Linda became a grandmother. She's training me. She is Nana, and I am Papa. So the other side of the family gets dibs on Grandma and Grandpa, apparently. So I was reflecting about little Simon. Now, Linda took issue with me earlier this week. How many of you are surprised that she would ever take issue with me? Little Simon, the first 24 hours of his life, wouldn't cry. He came out of the womb looking about as tough as any little guy I ever saw. I thought, boy, it's a good thing he doesn't have a tire iron in his hand. Oh, he really did. He looked tough. And wouldn't cry. They tried to get him to cry, and it just wasn't going to happen. Well, then, after about 24 hours, he began to cry. And when he began to cry, he seriously began to cry. Now, I found that very amusing. As our son Aaron was explaining to me how little sleep he got. Because I recall having been up with Aaron all hours of the evening and the morning. And Linda thought that it was a bad thing that I was enjoying the fact that Aaron now was experiencing what I had experienced all those years before. So I ask those of you who are grandparents, am I a bad man? There's division in the house. Little Simon has been born with a sinful nature. My dad said that many years ago in a church he was pastoring. Oh, people got upset with him. That little baby is completely innocent. He's done nothing wrong, true enough. But I can tell by the looks of him already that he will. You might say, what do you mean by the looks of him? Well, he looks human to me. And if he's human, I know that he has a bent towards sin. I know that it entered in through Adam back in the garden. I was afflicted by it, and you have been afflicted by it. And so if you are that person who would say, you know, I go to the church and they talk about doing the right thing and the right thing isn't natural for me, I would just say I can identify with those thoughts and those statements. In my flesh, it was not and is not natural for me as well. But I found that iniquity that led me into sin, it had consequences. I can't tell you how miserable I was. The more I sinned, the more miserable I was. The more miserable I was, the more I tried to kind of block out the misery. The more I tried to block out the misery, the more deeply I went into sin. And so I found that it was a vicious cycle that seemingly has no end. And you might say, but Pastor, you were young when you gave your heart to Christ. I was. But you need to understand that I was sinning against a great deal more light than almost anyone else that I have ever known. Because I'd been raised, I think, in a very exemplary way. And the more light you have, the more severe the consequences of your sin. But I will say this about afflictions. There is no life without afflictions. And I do wonder, why do we blame God and not the devil? Why, when things began to happen that we don't like, things that are wrong in our lives, physically, financially, in other ways, why do people tend to say, oh God, why are you doing this to me? Why is our first thought not, well, Satan, God's letting you have a good head of steam for a while, but it's only as much as he allows for as long as he allows it, because that would be the truth. Yes, I drew near the gates of death. You might say, Pastor, I never heard about you being in an accident where you very nearly died. Well, let's put it this way. I was very nearly in an accident in which I surely would have died. I was riding in the back seat of a station wagon going with five other guys to work one morning during the summer after I had graduated from high school. Our job was to trim Christmas trees. We had machetes, you wore long leather gloves, you went out there and you just shaped the trees. It was boring, it was monotonous, but it was pay. And so I was on my way out, and it was a Christian lady, an Assembly of God lady, who was driving the car. And the fellows in the back of that station wagon were, I suppose, engaged in very, very rough conversation, I'll put it that way, passing around magazines of a nature that they shouldn't have been looking at. And the louder they got with their profanity, the louder she sang. And she was singing Amazing Grace and Rock of Ages and hymns along that line. I was sort of about half asleep. I had my railroad conductor cap pulled down low over my eyes, and I was leaning back. And I felt something that was a bit strange. And I glanced up, and I could see on the passenger side of the car a wheel go bouncing off. Now, we were on a ridge, and it was about 100 yards, quite steep, into a ravine down below on the edge of a fruit tree orchard. And the car began to straighten out, fishtail straighten. And then the other wheel in back came off. And so now it was a pretty bad situation because we'd been a little bit late. She was going at a pretty good speed. And so the car began to come around. I had just about enough time to think this thought. I am about to die and go to hell. That thought went through my mind. The car came all the way around, went off the road, and began to roll. Later found, we're told by the state police, that a vehicle had gone off in the same spot a couple of weeks before and they were all killed. Well, why wouldn't they be? You roll over that far, that long, that steep. And so I had that thought crossed my mind, and then boom, and we stopped. One tree stump along that entire road, and we hit that. And that stopped us. Now you might say, Pastor, right then and there, you got out, you thanked God, and you poured out your heart in repentance to Him. No, that wasn't the way I rolled, no pun intended, at that point in my life. I was kind of upside down, looking through the window on the driver's side, straight up into the sky. I rolled the window down, pulled myself up, and hitchhiked into work. It didn't have a lot of effect on me. But within a couple of years, I found out that my sister, who lived in Flint, still does, had been praying for me at that very time. Hair wanted to stand up on the back of my neck. It has to work very hard to stand up now. But it had consequences, you see. And I drew near the gates of death. That was one story among many. I think with the hindsight that I had a death wish, I think in the hindsight that I was taking absolutely ridiculous risks because I pretty much hated who I was. But I'll move on. You see, God intervened repeatedly to spare my life because He valued it more than I did. God knew what He had created me to be. I just knew who I was. God had a plan in my life, and I did not have a plan in mine. So yes, I cried out finally to the Lord in my trouble. It was the 19th of November, 1975. I was in my dormitory room. It was a Thursday evening, and I had a big accounting exam the next day. I was studying. My roommate came by, and he asked me if I wanted to go and join some people in the student lounge who were praying and who were singing. And I cursed him, which was my standard way of dealing with such things. And he stood in there and he took it for quite some time. And then finally, he was being persistent. I said, "Bill, I'll come down and I'll stay for 30 minutes. But if you talk to me one time after that," and that I was physically threatening him and so on, which I did quite a lot of at that time in my life. I went down and I began to feel things that I hadn't felt in years. I'd been worried. My dad had talked about how you could, quote, sin away your day of grace. You could simply get so far away from God. It's not that God won't take you back, but you may find it very, very difficult or impossible to find your way back. And I had thought for quite some time that I'd crossed that point. So when I began to feel the old stirrings of conviction, I was very anxious that I might pursue that. And I was calling out on the name of the Lord. That went on for several hours. That began, I suppose, about 7:30 in the evening. And at 2 a.m., I was back in my room and I still hadn't prayed through. Some one of you might ask, "Pastor, just how stubborn were you?" That would be an appropriate question. I had offered to God everything I knew to offer. I told God that I would quit doing this, I quit doing that, I quit doing the other thing. Nothing. Heaven was silent. I began to talk to God about everything I knew that I'd done wrong, and I couldn't remember it all. How many of you would be able to? Okay. I couldn't. And finally, I just did my best to give it all to him. And I bargained, and I bargained, and I bargained. And as I say, heaven was silent. And then, after I'd gone to bed and tried to sleep once and couldn't, because I knew if I did not give my heart to Christ that night, I never would. As I was praying, this is what the Lord impressed on my mind. "Why are you asking me to do for you something I've already done? Why are you asking me to die for you for your sins when I already did it 2,000 years before?" And I thought to myself, "Self, it cannot possibly be this simple." God spoke and said, "Yes, it's just that simple. I've already done it for you. It simply is a matter of you accepting and receiving what I have done." I called out on the name of the Lord. The Lord responded, just as his word said in Psalm 107, by saving, healing, and rescuing me. The saving was of my soul. The healing was of my mind and emotions. The rescuing me was from a rotten life. And God has given me a great life. He's given me a wonderful life. When I begin to trade notes with other people, I find that I always seem to have a more blessed life than they do. Sometimes I don't think so when the conversation starts. But by the time the conversation's done, I begin to realize just how very blessed I am. And I haven't deserved any of it. You see, my debt to God could never be repaid. it could only be forgiven. God doesn't owe me anything. I owe God everything. That's my reality, and has been for now more than 40 years. He owes me nothing. I really want you to hear that. Nothing, nothing, nothing. I don't believe God probably owes you anything. You might say, well, God owed it to you to forgive you. No, he didn't. He chose to out of his love. He didn't have to. I'm going to ask those who are helping serve communion today to come forward at this time.